SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, about 15 minutes in, and Nick Tamaro joins us, and TAM1215, and of course, when I say that, it makes me realize 8 days away, you can celebrate Nick's birth. It's close to becoming a national holiday, Nick.
It's getting dangerously close. Good morning, Steve.
let me tell you, among horse players, it is. It absolutely is. They all will. The cards will be coming, and there'll be gift baskets. Maybe some of those goofy fruit things, you know, with the carved pineapple flowers and so forth. Yeah, it's going
to
be big.
I think I'd be able to handle that. You know, yesterday was the Feast of St. Nicholas, so that's usually the official kickoff of the countdown. So now we're getting there. We're headlong towards it, and it's on a Saturday this year, so it's fun. It's ironic. I'm an only child. My father's birthday and my mother's birthday are always on the same day each year. So it's on the same day of the week. So this was a fun year because we were all Saturdays. So
very nice.
You get
to go out.
There'll be a Sam Houston trip with my dad. Yeah, we're going to try one of Houston's numerous new restaurants in the evening. So should be a good time.
Well, and there's some good racing next Saturday, as it happens at Gulfstream. You got the Fort Lauderdale and the Harlan's Holiday and the Rampart and Sugar Swirl. So the first big graded stake Saturday at Gulfstream this winter. You've got Tampa with the Sandpiper and the inaugural and that kind of thing. So there'll be some action to take in as well. And we're being Italian. Were you named after an uncle or a grandfather or another?
No,
Nicholas?
I was Nicholas for the time of year. I was due on the 18th.
Oh, so. How funny is that? That's great.
Yep, I was, actually both. My grandfather's name was Dominic. My grandfather's name was Domenico. And so my mother wanted the Nick of Dominic, and Nicholas just seemed to fit really well with the time of year, so it all worked out, and it's festive.
That's really great. I love it. I'm glad I asked that. That's pretty funny. Say the original Saint Nick for this era. That's great.
The gift that keeps on giving.
Well, absolutely. If you're gonna hand out some 6, 7, 8, 10-to-1 shots, let's go back and look at Saturday. And I talked to Andy on Tuesday, Nick, and you know there was subsequently also the Jerry Brown postscript to Saturday's quirky timing. And I don't, you know, the portion of the blocked beam really doesn't figure into this. It's the final times, and the track obviously sped up. Jerry said it's the toughest day that he remembers to make figures, and you know Jerry takes it as seriously as Andy does, and Mark Hopkins, and you, and Dick Girardi, and everybody. That says something. If Jerry struggled with the card,
yeah, no doubt about it. And what it forces you to do is it forces you to take the only logical approach, which could also end up being flawed and you don't realize it, which is that you're going to end up relying on past figures. And you're going to give those past figures the credibility that you'd certainly like for them to earn, but you're going to have to watch them so closely. And so I can tell you that these are figures that, without question, Mark and Andy are going to be watching very, very closely. But the good thing about it is the races in which the horses had some exposed form, you can sort of be pretty confident that Marley's Freedom ran a 102. It was, given the gaps in the field and the quality of some of the horses that ended up being very, very well beaten, that felt like a fast race. It looked like a fast race. and the 102 seems to fit. The 101 for Come Dancing, yes, is a very, very big improvement from anything she had ever run. But let's not kid ourselves. She ran last Saturday. I mean, she ran a big race. She was in a good position the entire way and really finished stretching Marley's Freedom all the way to the wire. So it's quite believable that she could run a race like that. The biggest issue, of course, was that we dealt with a huge track speed change. And even taking the block beam, as you referenced, into consideration, it was obvious that we were dealing with a slow surface early on, and that became a considerably faster surface because there's just no way that Pattern Recognition ran on the same surface that Positive Spirit did. They may have run on the same racetrack, but the composition of that surface, the speed of that surface, was completely different. So you take a horse like Positive Spirit, who had run well in her maiden race at Churchill and was now facing winners for the first time and really freaked, really stepped forward in a huge way and looks like a totally legitimate two-year-old prospect moving into next year. So I'll eagerly anticipate her first start of 2019, and we'll look to see if she validates the 86 fig that she got. And that seems to fit well with the also-rans. Fleet Destiny got a 70, which was right in line with what she had run. Philly Joel regressed a tad off a good performance at Belmont, and obviously the disappointment in the race was enlivened and further backed up a theory that I know a lot of horse players share, which is that on the big stage, Kieran McLaughlin's horses either win or they're nowhere. And enlivened was nowhere, and that was certainly a bit of a surprise. Moving towards the Remsen was fast. There's no doubt about it. And I think it's totally believable that Bourbon War duplicated his strong debut performance. It's very believable that Tax improved a great deal, now in the care of Danny Gargan. And it's quite easily believable that Network Effect ran just as well in the Remsen as he had in the Nashua. This was as exciting a Remsen, or is as exciting a Remsen, in terms of how these horses are going to be due moving forward, as I remember in quite some time. And the Remsen's a race that's you know, almost become a punchline in terms of horses that run in it and how they do as three-year-olds. This felt like a good group, and I'm very excited to see Maximus Mischief and Network Effect both as three-year-olds. I think that you might see Network Effect equipped with a set of blinkers next time. Did feel like he ran in spots a little bit. But one thing that you can say about him is that in just his third career start, he probably got more in seasoning than you'd get in two races, given that he was between horses, he was a little bit behind. I've not really done enough work to say whether we may have had the paths on the surface change in terms of how productive certain ones were, so I wouldn't want to speak out of turn on that, but it certainly did look and feel in that race and the Cigar Mile and the Nightcap as if you wanted to be towards the rail, whereas earlier in the card you wanted to be as far away from the rail as possible. If that's the case, the Network Effect ran even better. And there's a number of horses in the Cigar Mile that you probably want to identify moving forward, horses that we know already. The point being that there may have been a little bit of a situation involving a bias that we didn't anticipate earlier on the card. So it definitely threw a wrench into the figure making. I think the winners were all quite worthy. The ride on Pattern Recognition was outstanding. There was no hesitation out of the gate. He got right to the front, took advantage of getting the lead, set a solid pace, and finished quite well. And he's a horse that, you know, far be it for me to extol the virtues of Chad Brown. That's certainly been done in every sphere involving racing. But he's done a great job with Pattern Recognition. There's no doubt about it. He was a horse that is clearly very ouchy. He's had a lot of issues. But to get him from an allowance race at Saratoga in early in the meet to a grade one after winning a grade two in just a few months is about as good a work as you're going to see with a dirt horse from anybody.
Well, it's funny the kind of swing around to that, because having just talked about Bill Perry with Susan Walsh and extolling, you know, the patience portion, and you know, that's a topic that comes up with horsemen depending on the owner, and you know, there's a real lesson in here. I frequently, you know, find myself discussing, you know, that topic with Shug McGahee, for instance, and Shug always extols, you know, the virtue of having owners that understand patience and not rushing horses back and setbacks and that element. And, you know, Seth Klarman, that he's fitting that mold as well, saying, you know, we don't have to get our money back. We don't have to force anything. And there's, you know, there's an important lesson there for everybody to take your time. And if your horseman, if your trainer says, you know, this horse needs time and, you know, he's not ready, you can't you can't get, you know, too eager. Just let, you know, let your horsemen do their job, basically.
Right, and you know, this race provides an interesting case in point, and this is said, of course, with all due respect for the owners and the trainers involved, but take Pattern Recognition in Coppertown and think back to where they were respectively earlier in their careers and where they were going into last Saturday. Coppertown is a horse who looked like an incredibly exciting prospect a little over a year ago, about 15 months ago, when he won an allowance race in September of 17. And what happened afterwards, obviously, was that Coppertown suffered yet another setback that his career has sort of been full of because he's not exactly made of iron. Well, neither is Pattern Recognition. And, you know, in this particular race that I'm referencing, Coppertown was a handy wire-to-wire winner. He beat Pattern Recognition very, very easily early, or middle of the Belmont 2017 meet. Afterwards was sidelined for a considerable amount of time, didn't resurface for a little over a year at Keeneland. During that period of time, Pattern Recognition kind of went through the motions in clearing the two other than condition after having won a one other than at Aqueduct. And the point I'm trying to make is that Coppertown got to the Cigar Mile because there is an initiative for his owners to get him to a stallion farm, to get him to their stallion farm. Whereas Pattern Recognition probably had a little bit more time, had a few less injuries, gave his trainer the luxury of giving him a little bit more of an extended, softer campaign. And he has an owner that doesn't need to see him in the breeding shed. He has an owner that needs to see him on the racetrack. So it was just a situation where it worked out. Obviously, Todd Pletcher has done numerous great things in his career, and one of the things that he's gotten really good at is getting horses back off of layoffs. But this is a situation where, whether you want to argue that he was rushed into it or that he, you know, maybe needed a race or something like that, Coppertown is a horse now that, unfortunately, I bet we won't see again for a while. And I hope we do, because he's really, really good. But this is the luxury that Chad Brown has training for somebody like Seth Klarman, who is going to give him the proper amount of time and is going to give him a real opportunity to let these horses develop. One of the other things that I thought was interesting about the race and is worth noting moving forward is how well True Timber ran after running a very good race when he was second, beating the distance to No Dozing in the Bold Ruler. I would have loved to have seen what No Dozing could have done in the Cigar Mile. He probably would have been positioned right outside of Pattern Recognition, and he's a horse I've always liked. So hopefully he gets over. It looked like a minor setback that Arnaud Delacour touched on as far as why he missed the race, but here's to hoping that he gets back quickly, because he's one that I've always been a big fan of.
You know, you bring up True Timber, and if we go back to our discussion last week, when you went through that field, and you know, a lot of times the statement is made, you know, you look at this group, and there's nobody that is an easy toss. There's a case in point, because if people were to, you know, start listing the eight of them and limit, you know, if you were forced to say you have to cross off five, True Timber would have been one that people would have gravitated to as one of the first couple of tosses, and there he was, you know, looming, and now earning his way potentially to a Pegasus start.
No doubt about it, and you know, what we mentioned, what you had said to me even before we spoke on the air, and what we mentioned talking on your show, is that the difference between the best horse and the worst horse in this race was minimal. It was almost negligible, and that really did. And I used True Timber prominently. I was definitely pulling for him to get there. Of course, I would have only been disappointed watching Mark Hennig's Wrong Ben win the Nightcap, who I thought had been on a gold rail last time, and perhaps got himself onto a gold rail again. But it would have been at least a little exciting. I was among the people with a big True Timber Sunny Ridge exacta, so I was looking for Pattern Recognition to find a way out of the mix. But he did not, and True Timber ran very, very well, and is a horse that, again, going back to early in his three-year-old season, he's a horse that ended up in the Sir Barton on Preakness Day, because he looked like a horse that might be, you know, a mid-range stakes type. And even though he's really not ever had an extended bit of time off, Kieran McLaughlin has definitely identified that he's better going a little bit shorter. And though they may try the Pegasus, he'd be a horse obviously down the line that I'd love to see cut back, and could probably imagine that he'll make his next appearance at Aqueduct in a race like the Carter.
Well, you didn't take my Wrong Ben suggestion then.
Of course, I'm not I'm too much of a wise ass.
All right. Well, that would tell you what.
Wrong
that,
Nick is what the horse's name is. That was me on Saturday. Wrong Nick. Right. I'm like, I had this great November. Now December started off as a real dud.
Well, I was delighted the way that ended up. I guess maybe because I've been hip to him from early on when it came up with Mark Hennig about right Ben and wrong Ben. And so sometimes you end up latching on to a horse or having a increased awareness of a horse as their career gets going. And that was the case with wrong Ben. And, you know, ended up, I think that was a very generous pair of returns on the late pick four and pick five on Saturday.
No, it was quite lucrative. And you know what? It brings up a point that's worth making in this day and age of riders that are extraordinarily passive with their mounts, especially ones with speed, that Jose Lozcano is still very underrated when it comes to being able to get a horse to the lead. And when he gets him there, he's very, very good. So he showed that with a nice front-running ride in what looked to me like a race where there would be a little bit too much pace for him. I thought there was maybe a little bit too much going against him. Little did we know that the Charlton Baker layoff returnee is probably a horse that is just has no ability to stay sound and can't really run. So once Quest for Fire sort of bowed out and Our Last Buck hadn't really shown any speed, things were made. Foolish Ghost, of course, was scratched. It made things quite a bit easier for Wrong Ben, who, you know, if you were on, you got a good reward.
Well, it was also a sequence where there were horses to lean on, and whether you went to Marley's Freedom as a single, I mean, it was a nice sequence to build tickets and to get after it, and I spread six wide in the cigar, and it's funny because I went the wrong way in terms of an A and a B, and I felt bad, kind of a little badly afterward because I had four A's and pattern recognition was a B for me, because I just, you looked at that group, Nick, and you said to yourself, well, let's see, let's go through scenarios. No one is going to wire this field. That was, for me, that was thought number one. So I said, all right, I'll make pattern recognition the shorter of the two prices. I'll make him the B. And the timeline, you know, from off the pace, the A. And I just didn't expect anybody was going to be able to wire that group. That came as a surprise.
Yeah, it came as a big surprise to me, too. I totally agree. And it was well done on the part of the connections and whomever made the determination that they needed to go to the lead. So it was well executed, and they got the reward. I mean, the other problem, of course, is that Mendelsohn broke from the rail, and when pattern recognition outbroke him so clearly and Jose had intent of getting to the lead, Mendelsohn really not being quite fast enough to go in there and probably a little reticent, both he and Ryan Moore, that really made a difference, because he was, you know, he was the horse that I think we were all sort of banking on, maybe not necessarily setting the pace, but he was at least going to be in control of the pace. What I mean by that is that if somebody did clear him, he was then going to set up shop right outside of them and put a little heat the whole way. But the way things unfolded, he was given no opportunity to do that, and that changed the outcome. That really was something that led directly to the outcome, more so than I think you could have predicted.
Excellent. All right, Nick, let's do this. Let's turn to tomorrow's action. And I thought between the Garland of Roses mid-card and the fifth, and then leading into the rest of the action, that the, you know, the late pick four and the pick five were well worth reviewing.
They really are, and this is of course similar for this time of year, and people are out there listening probably thinking, he says this every race, every stake race all winter, but I mean, it's a group of five in the Garland of Roses, and you know, there four horses can win. I mean, Tita Lalu is probably a little overmatched, but are you do you have a problem taking Yorkie Poo Princess at 5-1? I mean, and with due respect to David Aragon, the morning line maker, Yorkie Poo Princess got a 96 buyer last time against a field that was by no means full of bums. This is a horse that's always been at her best at Aqueduct, and she's probably going to be, at worst, the third choice. So you've a good little pace that looks like it'll shape up between Sower and Vertical Oak. Vertical Oak will get that good outside stalking trip that she likes. I thought the Dream Supreme, probably from a pace perspective, played out more for her than it did for a horse like Dream Pauline. And Dream Pauline did get into some trouble on the backstretch that was pretty significant. So seeing how she can run maybe with a little bit cleaner go of it is going to be very interesting, and really sets it up so that you've got to be, you probably have to use at least three A's. I'm not a huge fan of Sower. What I am concerned about is that Linda Rice's barn has gotten hot lately, and this is the kind of horse that when she gets going well, they have a tendency to run very well because Sower has a great deal of speed, and Eric Cancel is a little bit more inclined generally to relax some of his horses, so I'm hoping that he does give Vertical Oak the aggressive ride that she's at her best with as well, and that might just set things up for a horse like Yorkie Poo Princess, who, look, she has plenty of speed herself as well, so if she wants to show speed, if Dylan Davis asks her to go, she'll be in there as well. So I definitely like Yorkie Poo Princess, and I'm going to make an exacta with Dream Pauline, who I'm hopeful, obviously, will get a cleaner trip, and both might benefit if these two horses that should be pretty well fancied do end up battling a little bit on the front end.
Excellent. And, you know, I wanted to slip one note in when you mentioned Jose Lascano. There was a little blurb from Dave Grenig the other day. Lascano's going to stay in New York. He's not going to go down and be part of the scrum in South Florida. And Jason Viades making the decision and just feeling like there's more opportunities for them in New York, and of course the money's good, and why not? So get used to seeing Lascano, and actually there's going to be a good winter colony with Lascano, Manny Franco, Junior Alvarado, Rajiv, Eric Cancel, and then those Bug Boys. So some good choices for owners and trainers throughout the winter. Should be interesting. Let's turn to the late pick four.
You know, I always laugh just on that topic of the riding colony. I always laugh at what Ramon Dominguez used to say about the winter, and people would ask him if it was too cold, and he said it's a lot warmer when you're winning. And I think Jose Lascano will win a considerably larger amount of races, even with less racing days at Aqueduct than he would down in South Florida. So I don't blame him, because that shaping up down there is a pretty strong colony as well. So good for Jose. He's somebody who I've always thought had a tremendous amount of talent, and here's to hoping that he starts to get that to pan out a little bit. The sixth is a terrific New York bred claiming race where we see a lot of our old friends that have bounced around these ranks for some time. There's a couple of interesting claims that horses that are making their first start off of claims. Summer Bourbon is a reclaim. This is a horse who's always shown some ability and knocked heads with some of the better New York breds throughout the spring and then summer, and even into the fall, and maybe was beginning to head the wrong direction off the claim for Bruce Brown, and Rudy Rodriguez scooped him up right back. So keeps him at the $25,000 level. Ruben Silvera, who's a jockey that is new and back in the colony, who Rudy Rodriguez has used with success in the past, gets on. And he's a horse who should get a little bit of pace to run out. I think you can count on Bluegrass Flash and Blue Belt, obviously Bavaro, to get out and mix things up a little bit on the front end, and I think that'll set things up. It may set things up ultimately for H-Man, who's first off a claim by Charlton Baker. This is a barn that's done well off the claim in the past. Obviously, it's a claim from Rudy, so you always have some level of concern. The issue, I think, with H-Man is that the issue that I think will overcome is that he's just been a little bit too close to the pace in his last two races, and he's a horse that is at his best when he can settle and make one run. So a little bit like Summer Bourbon, it feels like he'll benefit if there's a little bit of hitting on the front end. I would be remiss in not mentioning Blue Belt a little bit more, even though I think he comes out of a race where he kind of chased a bit of a slowish pace, and it didn't look great that he was a little hesitant to get in the gate. But this is a barn that's hot, and John Toscano may not be as hot as he was earlier in the Aqueduct meet or more in the fall meet, because I guess we're talking about the winter now, but this is a horse who has done well at Aqueduct in the past and is going to offer a little bit of value. So I think he'll come up off that 4-1 morning line, and it's probably one that you want to include in any kind of horizontal wager. It appears as if we have two turf races left. One will be today, one will be tomorrow, and this 6-furlong turf race on the outer gets a good group together. Hop on the Bus Gus will obviously go tomorrow, given that she's entered in both places. And she was a really impressive winner last time. Bet like she couldn't lose, and certainly ran like she was never going to lose. This was a horse that Irad Ortiz gave one of his patented rides, covered her up, and as soon as she popped outside an upper stretch, there wasn't even the slightest doubt about her getting there. an enthusiastic gal was moving very, very well at her in the late stages, but there was never a concern. So I'm interested to see if she can handle the jump in class. Obviously, Glossy is the horse to beat, and Glossy is a horse that has improved really throughout her career, ran arguably the best race of her career last time. And that was during a period of time, where the outside pass on the turf course were definitely worse. You want it to be towards the inside. This is where, and we have seen a number of runbacks now with horses that have improved considerably getting away from or getting back to a fairer turf course or showing that they were hurt by where they were positioned. I mean, I'm talking about Raging Bull and Uncle Benny in the Breeders' Cup and presumably Glossy as well, who made a big move down the outside, whereas Mrs. Ramona G stayed on the rail the entire way, slipped up the fence, and got the job done. Now, Mrs. Ramona G came back and won on that big carryover day 2 weeks ago. That was against a relatively weak two other than field. This feels like the kind of group that Glossy can handle, and the only unfortunate thing about it is that it's going to be the only turf race. You're not really going to know how the turf is playing. The late autumn, early winter turf courses can have a tendency to get a little bit kind to speed. And I think the only thing you can do in order to keep yourself from being hurt by that, just throw transaction tax onto your tickets as a backup. She may not be good enough to win, but she's very, very fast. She had a fast workout the other day, and Mike Luzzi is the type of rider that's probably just going to send her as much as he possibly can. And looking through this field, there's really not a whole lot of pace signed up. So don't be beaten by a relatively logical fast horse that might get a little bit of a favorable trip on the front end. The eighth is another good one other than, and this is a field where you have Our Circle of Love facing winners for the first time. Our Circle of Love was in a relatively weak maiden race last time, but she made mincemeat of that field. She looked very, very good, sat just off the pace. There was never a doubt, one handily drawing away. I'm interested to see where she stacks up against winners and is obviously a horse that had run well earlier in her career, probably should have broken her maiden at second asking behind Wisconsin Knight, but hung a little bit that day. Feels like she might just be putting it together. And this is a barn that when they've give horses a little bit of time to develop, have always done very, very well. The interesting thing about this race is that it looks like Dark Tricks is going to get loose on the lead again. And Dark Tricks set a very fast pace last time, held on by a desperate head. Now, that was against much weaker. If she's going to be good enough to win this race, then she's going to have to take a step forward. What she should do is ensure that there's a pretty decent early gallop. And that will set things up for what I think is a slightly intriguing long shot and will certainly offer some value. Ipanema Beach is making her first start for Steve Asmussen. And this is a horse that Rusty Arnold obviously felt like had talent. He ran her in the Goldenrod in her second career start, and she was 16-1 in a 12-horse field that included Monomoy Girl and Road to Victory. So it's not as if she didn't get any support that day. This is a horse that's always shown some ability, now gets to a barn that obviously does very well with trainer changes. She's going to be 15 or 20 to 1. She's got the right kind of off-the-pace rider. Why not just give yourself the opportunity to make some money if this pace gets fast with a one-way speedball signed up and maybe see if Ipanema Beach. Her ceiling might just be an underneath slot, but boy, I mean, if she gets in the number at a big price, she's going to juice up that pick 4 and pick 5 considerably. So she's one that I wanted to be sure to include. And what you want to do is get alive to as many horses as possible, because the Nightcap is just a maddening group of $25,000 New York-bred maiden claimers. And you're going to have a 9-5 favorite for Ray Lou Gutierrez and Pat Quick breaking on the far outside. So it's not a... it's not a particularly encouraging scenario. You do have a high percentage barn or two set up, including Devilry, who maybe you want to give the excuse of the wet track last time. He was really bad. He was inside, maybe wasn't exactly the most ideal place to be, but that was a very, very weak performance, and I think you can hope that things will get a little bit easier for him, maybe facing a softer field. So I'd say you want to get alive to quite a few. Cross Multiplies run races that are good enough to win, but he's another one that's really stacking up defeat after defeat. And the lightly raced horses just don't offer a whole lot of encouraging signs. So put your tickets together carefully. Obviously include those long shots if you can. And hopefully we don't all get into a scenario where we're really needing Unsullied to save our day.
Well, Valmont, in there, I think, has...
Yeah, Valmont's a super dangerous horse, absolutely. No, that was the first time Lasix. This is a horse who was entered a couple of weeks ago, and I think it was a card that was canceled, and is one that you can count on showing some speed. So set a very strong pace last time on the turf, now moves to the dirt. Ray handles a good turf-to-dirt trainer, and the yielding turf course last time, obviously, was not to his liking. So first time Lasix, surface switch, you're getting a lot of stuff that that looks encouraging.
Big time, and you know, has had some time since that race in October, and came back and worked steadily, and second off the extended layoff, and the Lasix, and et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, I 12-1 looks inviting. Make sure he's on your tickets, and Nick, have a terrific weekend, and looking forward to closing out a couple more conversations before the end of the year. We'll do some of our year-end stuff, and I suggested maybe that Santa Anita on your agenda, how soon after the meet starts?
You know, maybe not until the big cap. I'd love to go sooner, but I'm going to go to the Pegasus, I'm going to go to the NHC, and then I'll probably keep the contest schedule that I had more or less this year. I try to put one new one in at some point. So yeah, would love to make it out to Santa Anita as soon as possible. But I think if not the big cap, then if the contest that was on Preakness weekend this year happens again, then I'll definitely be there for that.
Well, what's the difference on what the schedule is? You're going to qualify at Hawthorne anyway, so what's the
exactly? I'm a one race engagement. I'm me and my friend Chris Pepsnick, who works at Arlington. I jokes with me now that he's just going to pencil my name in each year. So that was one of I actually have my list of contests that I played this year. I played in 12 contests, which is more than I've ever done. And ended up profitable, which is good. Have my two NHC entries, and we'll play the Pegasus as well with my man Philly Joe, who of course won his back in May of last year. So looking forward to that. And yeah, it was a good run this year. It was a good finish, not necessarily the quickest start, but ended up all right. And you never know. We got two lottery tickets for the NHC. Maybe that can get lucky again.
Yeah, looking forward to being out there, and in fact, spent a good portion of the Arizona trip. I did get to spend some time with Michelle Ravencraft and Keith Shamblin, and we're making some plans for the 2019 contest season, and that'll include some at the races coordinated contests, which will be a lot of fun. So
that'll be awesome.
Right, it should be cool. That'd we're gonna do a series of qualifiers, up to a championship kind of thing. It should be cool. Maybe you can help me structure it. All right,
for sure. Would love to.
Excellent, Nick Tamro, everybody, and Tam, 1215, and when we talk next week, it will be within 24 hours of Saint Nick's birthday. Very cool. Thanks, Nick. Taking a timeout here. It's 15 to the top of the hour, and Ed DeRosa going to join us. We'll let Ed sound off. I think he did a little video with Scully, and I guess he was not happy with the Graded State Committee. So we'll see what Ed's thoughts were. Back after this, John Parada later, and more Mike Welsh as we continue to do the weekend preview at the races, live from Santa Anita.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Daytime Southern California Thoroughbred racing action is back at Los Alamitos Racecourse. Opening day is Thursday, December 6th. First post is at 1 p.m. on weekdays and 12:30 p.m. on weekends Pacific time. On Saturday, December 8th, don't miss a doubleheader of stakes racing action with the Grade 1 Los Alamitos Cash Call Futurity and the Grade 1 Starlet for two-year-old fillies. Bob Baffert will go after his fifth straight win in the Los Alamitos Cash Call Futurity, while past Starlet winners include champions Take Charge Brandy and Abel Tasman. All the top names will be here through our closing day on Sunday, December 16th. Plus, the $1 Los Alamitos Pick 4's return. The wager has been well received and the pool's figure to grow. Los Alamitos also features a traditional pick six wager. And don't miss our live money handicapping contest on Saturday, December 8th. You could win a seat to the 2019 NHC. Join us on track or at your favorite satellite or ADW provider. Opening day is Thursday, December 6th. For more, go to losalamitos.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Feeling like a boss and staring at the stars. It doesn't matter the cost, cause everybody wants to be famous. Some call the shots, so see you over a bar. It doesn't matter the cost.
We're back at the races. Loose horse just zipped by and is now going straight into the down the chute and into the barn area. Took a left turn. So he's off the track at least, and hope that couldn't see the. I took a picture actually. I think I might be able to tell whose horse it was. The saddle towel's kind of bouncing around. Ed DeRosa joining us. Ed, good morning.
Good morning. Sounds like you're a golf stream, I guess.
Santa Anita.
Oh, Santa Anita. Okay. I knew you had left the symposium, so I wasn't sure if they pulled you to the Classico.
No. No. Starlet and Futurity tomorrow. And I've made this trip now. This is the third time in 4 years we've been able to parlay this. And kind of cool, actually. Yeah, it should be good tomorrow. And
now, is that club sandwich Jeremy Balin's been talking about as good as advertised? Have you had that?
Where? Oh, that's some deli. No, I go to the Catella Deli. That's the okay. Catella is my sandwich of choice. Although I did find the road that's parallel to Catella Ave, I found a fabulous sandwich joint, actually a sub joint, on the back side of Los Al. And I forget the name. I'll have to check my listings for that. But yeah, the Catella Deli is top notch. I mean, that it's the real thing. So, but I will. Mm-hmm. I did see Jeremy tout that club sandwich. So
he touted. He put himself out there for sure.
Well, I sent you that Sonoran hot dog because that
was fantastic.
That had DeRosa written all over it. And Sid Fernando, for those of you that follow Sid, Sid also was inspired, and he recreated it at home in Brooklyn yesterday. He made his own Sonoran, which I can't wait to talk to him on Wednesday about. Pretty fun.
Yeah, look, I was dubious that he would even try since yours was so good, but he's in one of the locales where it probably is manageable. So, yeah, that good one. For him. Good for
it.
You, inspiring culinary delights.
Exactly. We love inspiring people to try culinary attempts. I love it. Before we talk any racing topic in terms of the weekend, first of all, of course, you had that nice push last week at Turfway as things got started. And then I saw the video that you did with Scully. Of course, a week ago we got the American Graded State Committee announcements, and you were grousing.
Yeah, you know, I always have to temper a little bit because obviously the race is at my employer's racetrack, so happy to acknowledge that from the get-go. But I don't understand the reliance, and, you know, I know a few people on the committee and had written about it when I was at Thoroughbred Times, and, you know, they'll point to the numbers and they have their system, and I appreciate that. I think that certainly helps. Refresh and get you in the ballpark of what races have produced what results. I don't understand how we've gotten away from sort of this pattern system that we know, I think, I don't want to say works, but seems to be a better indicator of race strength in Europe. To me, you need races throughout the year that you acknowledge are prestigious and more important than others, and looking at the calendar of where the grade ones are for the older male division, I just don't understand how you downgrade the Stephen Foster, which absolutely has a chance to produce champions and even horse of the year, over a race like the Clark, even. I'll use a local race to keep it fair, which is never going to have, or very, very rarely going to have, a horse of the year contender because they've likely raced in the Breeders' Cup, and you're getting the second tier by default more often than not, whereas the Stephen Foster just seems to, you know, if you want to say, hey, here's the grade one races, that's going to be one. And now there isn't one east of the Mississippi between the Pegasus and the Whitney. And I just, that doesn't make sense to me. I don't see how you can have a division where you say the Oaklawn Handicap, Stephen Foster, Pimlico Special, Suburban, any four of those aren't worthy of a grade one, and not saying all 4 hours should be, but we've gotten away from this pattern element of building up to races and creating a division, and it's frustrating.
Well, and I understand, you know, I can understand all the and each of the local concerns and complaints, but at the same time, there's been at this point, long-standing feeling that there's too many grade ones, certainly, and that, you know, whenever a race comes out and a field gets put together and it doesn't meet the, you know, the quality control test from observers, we hear, this is the worst grade one we've ever seen. Okay, well, now it's a grade two. So I don't know. This is one of those whose ox is being gored discussion. And I don't know. I don't know how you satisfy everybody on this front. You know, and I did see the comment you said about, you know, potentially antiquated system. I mean, you can evaluate the system, Ed, right on the TOBA website, and the entire grading system is right there to be perused and to be understood, and how this works. And I mean, every year we kind of go through the same exercise, and, you know, people trying to compare a race like the Foster to a race like the Jiper, they're not apples and apples, and
right. And
that's a silly. I mean, somebody. I don't know who made that point, but it's preposterous. They're a grade one in that division. It doesn't have the same. They're not equivalent, and there's no need to try to make them an equivalent.
Right, and I appreciate that Turf Sprint needed a grade one beyond the Breeders. I don't say needed, but, you know, the division has come to prevalence, and, you know, the Driper, I love, I mean, I think it's a fun race, so appreciate that. I think, you know, just to look at another division, and this goes to me, the philosophical challenge of the situation is, are you grading races literally? Which from that approach, you can sort of understand the downgrade. My criticism or angst is definitely more on the philosophical side, where we're at a point now with the Zenyatta and Beldame being downgraded, that the older females only have one grade one option as a final prep to the Breeders' Cup, and that's the Spinster, whereas three-year-old fillies can run in the Cotillion on dirt and stay in their sex, or even turf with the Queen Elizabeth being a grade one. And those both have had fantastic winners lately in full fields, et cetera. But like I said, from a macro level, I just don't see how you take races like the Beldame and Zenyatta and say that they're not as prestigious as the Spinster, even within the division. It just seems like year to year, even going back a few years, isn't a fair judgment. And, you know, we could have a situation like we've seen with the Delaware race, when Blind Luck and Havoc de Grace were having their rivalry. Or even the Foster. I mean, you one year to the next, you get the field of your dreams, and it's a great two. And it's just that to me, there's just certain races I think you can say that, hey, these are grade ones because of their place on the calendar, their tradition, and we want, you know, we want
no,
to
I,
have
yeah.
important races.
No, I no doubt, I get it. And in fact, I brought this up the other day, in fact, yesterday with Mike Willman, regarding what the Breeders' Cup, you know, the ill effect of the Breeders' Cup when it comes to this, that, you know, the, and I don't want to call it damage, but the impact, let's say.
Yeah. Collateral damage, maybe?
Yeah, collateral. Yeah, exactly.
But, and, you know, we went through this with the Derby prep races. I'm fine with if you want to say, hey, look, the Derby's the race everyone's pointing to, and they're all grade twos, and the Derby starts the grade one season for three-year-olds, or they're all grade ones because everyone wants to win a 100-point race and get to the Derby. I'm fine with either cherry-picking the Wood Memorial because it's been down the last few years, or the Bluegrass. To me, that gets, like, that's what I have a problem with. I just think philosophically we all recognize these are important races on the Derby trail, the most important, and they should all be grade ones or all be grade twos. And I sort of feel that way about established final year going into the Breeders' Cup races like the Beldame and the Zenyatta. Those aren't grade two if the Spinster is a grade one, or vice versa.
That's point well made.
Approach, and definitely can understand how people disagree, but, you know, that's how I feel. And if I were, you know, more involved, that would be a pillar of my platform for sure to fight for.
No, fair enough. And no, these are important discussions, no doubt about it. Let's talk some selections, some big picks, Ed.
Nothing too sexy in the futurity. I'm a big fan of Improbable. I'm going to trust my eyes and just probably watch. I don't really have any value with him. But a couple of my colleagues, James and Scott, both bet him in the first future pool, and don't mind that they did. 16-1, considering what some of the other Baffert runners were, I think is a pretty solid price. So looking forward to seeing him run in the futurity. I am going to try to get clever in the Starlet, though. I'm really intrigued by Anaya Al-Rab, if I said that correctly, for Doug. Really interesting that this one gets Mike Smith up. Is definitely going to have to get a lot faster, but O'Neill has another one in here, Sold It, who should keep Mother company on the front end. Vibrance and Oxy Lady and Chasing Yesterday will all be right there, you know, close to the pace. And I just think there is a chance with Mike Smith up, who doesn't ride a lot for O'Neill, that's kind of what caught my eye, that this one could be closing. And at 12-1 when we know the Baffert and Vibrance are going to take money. She's the one I'm going to try to crash the try with.
This is a really good race, and yesterday with Mike Willman, the more we kind of went through the horses, the more intriguing it got. And I mean, if you're going in that direction, and this thing is even more difficult. Because
we know Mike's fine to sit in the jock room, so that caught my eye that he was on this one.
Well, and I mean, Oxy Lady, you want to talk about visually impressive? Certainly that effort, and it feels like Baffert is cleverly and very pointedly rebooted chasing yesterday since the spinaway miscue. So, Mother ran a nice race, although she certainly didn't get complimented by Multibella and that try last week in the Demoiselle. And then there's Vibrance, and I mean, this is for a six pack. This is a serious group. So
certainly,
absolutely. The Futurity did get a shave from grade one to grade two for next year, but frankly, this group might get it right back up for 2020. Frankly, because this is a nice group, and I know that with James, we wish James the best. I know he had to spend part of the morning with his mother with a medical issue, but he's on to Extra Hope. He was hoping for better than 7-2, but he thinks Extra Hope is live in there.
Mm. That's in the Futurity?
In the Futurity, yeah. The yeah. Samantha Siegel homebred.
Yeah, no, they're compelling races. And, I was kind of, to be honest, kind of cool on this crop going into the Breeders' Cup. It just seemed like there's, just a lot of regional, a lot of maiden winners. And, then the long shot won the race at Keeneland. And game winner didn't, even for an undefeated Baffert, just didn't seem to have the same kind of buzz you might expect from some of the others he's brought to the table. But, I mean, really since the Breeders' Cup with Signal Man coming back to win, Maximus Mischief popping a big number in the Remsen. Good to see a brilliant debut winner win a race like the Remsen at 9 furlongs. And now this Futurity, I'm definitely starting to, get the Derby feels about this group. It's good to kind of see that turnaround and Barnes ramping up as we head to their three-year-old season.
Nice. What else you got?
Well, wanted to mention a couple of spots at Fairgrounds. It's their big Louisiana bred day, and Twin Spires has some promos for that. So reminder to check out twinspires.com/offers. But looks kind of chalky on the back end. Ours to Run and Monty Man are both horses I think you can lean on to close out the stakes portion of the program. But the Louisiana Champions Day Lady Stakes, which is the turf route race, Bermuda Star is the third choice on the morning line, and I definitely think she figures to get a really good trip. Kind of mid-pack and has some really solid Brisnet numbers compared to the rest of the group that compete well with here, including a big prime power advantage. So hopefully she'll be 7-2. It's a 9-horse field for now, but she had the look of one of the non-favorites on a day that typically leans chalk with the Louisiana breads that I'm going to give a long look to in race 10 at Fairgrounds.
All right. What else?
That was actually all I got. I wish I had a little more clever opinions at Fairgrounds.
That's all right.
The two at the back end of the card are definitely the favorites, but Bermuda Star was one that stuck out. And looking forward, though, I will say we have the Futurity this weekend, and the points races conclude next week at Remington for the two-year-old. So they usually put on a fun card, and it's sort of that off time when you can look at some of the different tracks running away from, the coast. So, looking forward to seeing this crop develop.
Excellent. Well, Ed, starting to get ready for some year-end conversations and some
Absolutely.
Of the award discussions and so forth. So a couple more weeks.
I won't shy away from.
No, absolutely. Looking forward to it. Best of luck this weekend. And DeRosa, everybody. EJXD2. And he'll tweet out those big picks and whatever else. Maybe some
Absolutely.
Maybe some family, some Christmas tree decorating and some of the some of those activities and with the kids.
Bethany just gave me a big pick for you.
What is it?
She reminded me that in addition to specific promo for Fairgrounds is $10,000 place promo.
Excellent.
Split pot and all that. So the website stays the same, twinspires.com/offers, but she definitely wanted to point out that specific promo, which people seem to like with the big money on the place pool.
Absolutely. So opt in, and we thank Febby for that.
Yeah.
I love
and
it.
And Chuck, if you're listening, sorry to put an anchor on your horse yesterday at Gulfstream.
Oh, what the Deputy Czar?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought he looked good at 5-2. I took the plunge, but
I think the favorite beat him, right? He ended up second in the favorite.
Yeah, tenacious too. I mean, he looked like he might pack it in when the favorite spurted away, but dug in. But yeah, no match, unfortunately, for the Chalk.
All right. Well, Chuck, Chuck and Roger Satina, they like Deputy Czar, and he's got a little bit of might have a little secunditis in him a little bit. Unfortunately, but Chuck Simon, folks, will keep an eye. Chuck's gearing up for a big winter. Ed, I appreciate it. Talk next week.
My pleasure. Yep, thanks, Steve.
Ed DeRosa, folks. Let's take a break. John Parada is going to swing in and get a few minutes in with John and get caught up here at year end. And he's getting ready to go back to Ireland in January and get some updates on the racing club. It's kind of a quiet early winter, late fall. But there's some things afoot. And see what else has got John occupied. I don't know if he's, you know what, he hasn't mentioned if he's writing something new, actually, now that I think about it. And we've got, Casey, don't let me forget, next week we got to get the book recommendations in as well. We're at Santa Anita, and it is the beautiful day that we would you kind of want when you come here. About time. after snow in Arizona and teeming rain here. Back after this, John, and we'll check in with Mike Welch as well. At the races. SiriusXM Weekend Preview. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on SiriusXM Radio.
Daytime Southern California Thoroughbred Racing action is back at Los Alamitos Racecourse. Opening day is Thursday, December 6th. First post is at 1 p.m. on weekdays and 12:30 p.m. on weekends Pacific Time. On Saturday, December 8th, don't miss a doubleheader of stakes racing action with the Grade 1 Los Alamitos Cash Call Futurity and the Grade 1 Starlet for two-year-old fillies. Bob Baffert will go after his fifth straight win in the Los Alamitos Cash Call Futurity. All past Starlet winners include champions Take Charge Brandy and Abel Tasman. All the top names will be here through our closing day on Sunday, December 16th. Plus, the $1 Los Alamitos Pick 4 is returned. The wager has been well received and the pool's figure to grow. Los Alamitos also features a traditional Pick 6 wager. And don't miss our live money handicapping contest on Saturday, December 8th. You could win a seat to the 2019 NHC. Join us on track or at your favorite satellite or ADW provider. Opening day is Thursday, December 6th. For more, go to losalamitos.com.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.